dead bull.
Welcome to Western Contours Podcast, sharing experiences, providing insight, and looking for solutions to become better hunters. Whether you're chasing bugles over the next ridge, sitting a stand out east, this is about passion, pursuing our dreams of field, our lifestyle, the betterment of self and community, the enlightenment that comes from those moments spent in God's creation. Through these conversations, I hope you find insight, inspiration, education, and motivation to push beyond your limits.
All right, so we're on with some folks over at VP Archery. I'm pretty excited. I stopped by the booth at Hunt Expo, and as busy as it is there, and it's kind of a, at least in my opinion, a consumer-based show for y'all. So I didn't want to, you know, take up too much time and do too much brain draining. And I think when I was over talking to Alex, it was, I don't know, 10 minutes or so before the announcement of we're closing the door. And as soon as I heard that, I just ran. So I'm
it's a nut house.
Yeah. So I'm glad we're able to get on. And you guys had, you know, we had shared messages back in, wow, I think it was December. And I responded mm-hmm. and then it just fell to the wayside. Just trying to keep up with the stuff that comes through on Instagram. So I was like, oh my goodness. When I saw it, I was like, I feel like such a a-hole. But nonetheless, we're here to talk about one of my favorite topics, and that's archery, and get into what you guys are doing at Advantage Point and some of the beautiful broadheads you guys are putting out there. So why don't we start off, go ladies first with intros and give us a little background, and then we'll just roll from there.
Uh-oh.
Alex froze.
Here, I think just over 2 years now.
Oh, start over.
Oh, sorry. Did you lose me?
Yeah, we lost you. You were frozen there in the limbo. So let's see.
Got me. Got yeah, you guys are breaking up on me too. So hopefully it's not my connection. Okay. Yeah, my name's Alex Christensen. I'm the marketing manager here at BPA. I've been here for just over 2 years now. So I'm actually new to bow hunting. I've always grown up in the outdoors and, you know, with a family that grew up hunting out west, actually, and moved over to Indiana. But this past season was my first season bow hunting, and I love it. It's been so fun to get into through working at VPA. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
So why go from the west to Indiana and then start bow hunting? That is my first question. That might be the most pressing question of the podcast.
You can end the podcast when she answers them.
I've basically grown up in Indiana my whole life. Indiana, Kentucky. So my parents are both originally from Utah, and my grandparents and parents both grew up hunting. And kind of when we moved out here, it wasn't as prevalent, I guess, and they just didn't really keep up with it. So it wasn't something I really grew up doing. I was more involved in sports and things like that. But it's been fun since working at VPA to get back into it, and kind of the whole family getting back into it too. So it's been nice. Been pretty awesome.
Heck yeah. Kind of spurred it back on for everyone.
It did. Yeah. Yep.
That's good. Go ahead, Brian. All you, bud.
All right. Brian Poe. I'm the sales manager at VPA, and I've been here since October. Had about a 35-year manufacturing career, about 30 of those in orthopedics, which is huge in Northern Indiana. But I was made the offer by the fine folks at VPA, and I actually turned it down for a while just because of the change. Had nothing to do with the people and the opportunity, but my kids all thought I was out of my mind. They're like, you can go to a bow shop or a gun shop and talk as a hobby. Now they want to pay you to do it. So when they put it like that, it made a lot of sense, but really glad I came on board. A lot of good people, a lot of integrity, a great team, doing a lot of good things, good period of growth right now. So I've been bow hunting. I just finished my 38th season. Here in Indiana, I've only bow hunted whitetails. I have never hunted anything else. I had opportunities at turkey and small game, but I don't know. To me, bow hunting whitetails is as good as it gets for me here. Now, opportunities to come out west and chase elk, even caribou down the road or something, I am all in to do. But for here in Indiana, to me, there's nothing like whitetail hunting.
Why? I mean, with a bow and generally speaking, right, out of a blind or a stand.
Yep.
There's something to be said.
Yeah, stalks too.
Yeah, there's something to be said about the ability to sit in a tree stand, deal with the weather you deal with in that fall season there. And I mean, a lot of Western guys will poke fun at down south, back east, right? Sitting in a stand. Blah, man, was it year before last, we went down to Texas, a buddy of ours managing a property, and I sat in that stand and couldn't believe the mental fortitude that it takes to sit through a 10, 11, 12 hour sit. It is and you can think you're in the best shape of your life until you get into a freaking tree stand, man. It is rough.
Yeah. Especially some of the temps. And our early season temps will be 70s. I mean, we've had opening days of archery October 1st where it's low 80s. And then we're below zero with wind chills, you know, by November, December sometime. Right. So we see it all.
Yeah. It's nuts. And the whitetail are switched on. And it's like they're switched on all the time.
Yeah.
Right. There's no going out and we may catch one, you know, maybe if it's in the rut, he's not looking up at some point. But I was sitting in the stand, I'm watching pigs and deer, but I can see them coming and they'll stop. They'll look right up at me. I haven't moved. And I'm like, they know the position of the stand. It is the craziest thing, man. And there's a lot to go into planning that hunt, right? And where you're putting your stands, you know, and your wind on the properties and whatnot. So I think it's pretty cool. It's definitely a bit different than what we're used to here, but there's so many similarities when it comes to the mental game and the wind and yada, yada, yada. I mean, super fun. We're actually leaving for Texas, I think Thursday or Friday this week. Going to take some of the single bevels down with us and see if we can't put a hurting on some exotics and some hogs down there with them. So pretty excited for that.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Yeah.
So let's talk vantage point. So, you know, where, when, who, what, how, the whole nine on vantage point. Let's get some history on the company and maybe some of the product line that folks would know about. I know you guys have been pushing and it seems to be kind of, you know, blowing up a little bit, but give us the who, what, wins and everything.
Mm-hmm. Alex, so I can go ahead and get us started. So we're actually a machine shop and we still have that, you know, part of our business, Absolute Machining. It's been around for over 20 years now. So one of our head machinists, Jeff Miller, who's still with us, was a big traditional bow hunter and just wanted to make his own broadhead, saw the need for a more durable, you know, American made head in the market. And I think our first head was a 3-blade 150 grain, maybe just a solid head, pretty simple. And word of mouth spread, he gave it to his friends and it really just went from there. So that was about 2008, 2009. And then the past couple of years, we started selling online and getting into a lot of bow shops and really just been growing like crazy. It's hard to keep up, but it's been awesome.
That's a pretty stout head to start off with, but that goes right in line with that trad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Set up there.
Yeah, that's really our following started out in the traditional community, and we still have a ton of traditional, you know, customers, but really crossbow and compound and a little bit of everything. So it's been fun to kind of see it evolve too a little bit over time.
And are you guys still making a 500 grain?
I think we do. We don't sell it on our website. I think we have a customer who wants one made. Yeah, and gets it occasionally. So we carry on our website 100 to 300 right now is what we offer.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at the pack you guys sent me here, and it was up to 350. So I was like, huh. I mean, there's plenty of guys that are still out there and gals shooting, you know, that 500 out front there.
Yeah,
for our compounds. I didn't even ask you guys. So compound or trad?
Compound. Yep.
Compound for me as well.
Okay. So we're all smart on here. Why make something exponentially more difficult and we don't have to?
I'm still learning just how to get out there and bow hunt with the compound bow. So I think it'll be a very long time before I jump over to that side, if ever.
Yeah. I keep saying I'm going to grab a trad bow. And every time I think about doing it, I look back at my season and go, nah.
Yeah. You know what? I have an obsessive personality. I'm the person that if I start something, I want to be at least good at it. It may not be the best, but I want to be what I feel. Okay. I'm satisfied. And I know where that would lead. If I picked up a trad bow, I would be out here for hours worse than I am a compound. And I don't have time for that.
Yeah. No.
I'm just staying away from it.
You and me both.
Yeah.
So how did, okay, you know, where did it come from? We kind of talked about where it started. What makes you go, we're going to dive into this realm of broadheads? And then in the market today, say, we're going to ramp up our line, expand our line, and really make a push towards the market. I mean, it's, one would say that it's saturated a bit. What sets VPA apart, et cetera?
Yeah. So I guess what sets us apart, is easy to start off would be just American made. It always has been. We always will be. All of our broadheads are done in-house and, you know, in our machines. We have about 30 employees working in our machine shop. So we consider that 30 families we take care of. So we're very serious about, you know, USA manufacturing and growing, you know, in that area too. We make our own broadheads. We actually machine other archery accessories like ILF risers. We do some small game heads, field points, stuff like that. And then we machine products for other companies in the archery industry, firearm industry, and stuff like that. So really everything we've done has been based off customer feedback and just seeing what the need is in the market and expanding from there, expanding into the two blade stuff. And most recently with the single bevel has been, you know, the trend over the past couple of years. So that's been the most recent expansion. But yeah, customer feedback is kind of what drives us.
Brian, you have anything to add?
Yeah, and the beautiful thing is too, in addition to manufacturing everything in-house, which when we've gone to trade shows, people are so impressed with that. They just think you're a standalone broadhead company and that's it. And they're so impressed with the fact that I call it our parent company, Absolute Machining. We make our own stuff and we make stuff for other people too, without getting into details. So, you know, we're a premium product. We're sourced in the USA as well. So not only do we have USA manufacturing, but we source our material in the USA. And that's really big. That was a real push for me when I first started shooting VPA heads, which was a few years before I started working here. And then since then, I've just seen a dedication to that, the USA manufacturing and sourced. And that's, I'm all about it. And if we can't get behind that, I'm not sure we can get behind.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal, right? You know, yeah. Just like Alex said, right? You're supporting all those families with that effort. So,
yeah. Oh. And decades of policies, you know, with sending things to China. And unfortunately, we as consumers are to blame too. We like cheap stuff. And for a long time, we thought, hey, it's cheap, but cheap. And we never thought about, you know, decades down the road where it would end up. So I know a lot of people are really impressed also with our USA manufacturing. I've only had a couple of people say, my customers don't care. Everybody else has said, hey, we're all about that. We want to work with you guys just because of that, if nothing else.
I think to a point that, I mean, there's truth on both sides of that, right? I think a lot of people say it and don't necessarily, for convenience, for finance, follow through with that, right? And the convenience part of it, I'm going to have to disagree with that approach. Finance part of it, I can get it, but buy once, cry once is kind of my belief when it comes to, especially things I take out into the field.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at even our price structure, we've got price point heads, you know, like a three blade, 100 grain. It's not much more than a G5 Montec. It's not, and it's a way better head. It's not MIM, one piece of machine bar stock. And it's just a better head all the way around. And it's very, very comparable in price. So, you know, some people say the price thing, but they also look at maybe your premium heads or your top shelf heads. And that's what they look at. Well, not everybody can afford those. I get it. I've been there myself before, but you can still do better, I think, than what a lot of people settle for.
Absolutely. So neither one of you touched on how crazy is everyone at VPA for stepping into this realm and upping a product line, right? I mean, it takes a lot to look at our industry and say, this is the approach we're going to take. So either you're crazy or you feel like the product is top shelf and it's better than X, Y, or Z, and no offense to anyone else, to really step out and say, hey, we're going to go, you know, Alex is on, cojones to the wall.
Yeah.
You know, in this realm, you know, what is that? What's that decision process? Because that you look at it and go, well, wow, don't we have enough broadheads?
Alex, you want to start it?
Sure. I guess kind of like going back to what we mentioned, we take the customer feedback into consideration. And then typically our team meets, we don't have a big team. So we wear a lot of hats, that's for sure. So it does, you know, we are kind of crazy when it comes to adding a lot of new products and keeping up and pushing ourselves to, you know, expand into not even just broadheads. More recently, we expanded into the firearm industry with pistol compensators, which you probably saw at the show, but a little bit of everything. So really it's just kind of doing our research and putting those numbers together to see what's worth, you know, the investment for us to develop a new product, put it out in the market. It's a lot of time and testing, but I don't think everyone realizes how much R&D gets put into a broadhead, even if it's just a different grain weight. We still want to do thorough testing to ensure it's going to hold up, you know, the test of time and all the different tests they put it through.
Yeah.
So just a bunch.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, after you.
My thinking is, had I been offered this position back in October, and I wouldn't have seen not just the Omega from last year, which I used this last season successfully. It works really, really well. But all of the things that they listed during the interview process, we're doing this and this and this and this. And plus, we want you to bring more in. We want to grow this thing. We just that forward looking, you know, mindset is really what attracted me also. If they would have said, I just come in, you know, it's the same heads and just go out and sell those things and good luck. I don't know if I would have accepted the position, to be honest. I think it would have been maybe boring and flat and just not as fun to even have maybe design input in certain projects. And again, we have a great team. Everybody listens to each other, even if you disagree, and we're okay with disagreeing with each other. And, you know, and it all comes down obviously to ownership with decisions they want to make, but everybody is open to listening. And I don't know if that makes you crazy or just different, but it's been effective.
There's huge amounts of wisdom in that, right? Especially if you have a diverse team of people. I think it's a little crazy, right? When you look at the offerings and go, we're going to slam the market.
Yeah.
But there's wisdom in taking customer input, your R&D input, the folks that you bring on input. It's huge. So talk about the R&D process a little bit, and then I want to get into some of the heads. How does that R&D process look like? How are we testing different steels? Are we testing edge retention, hardness? You know, is it gelatin and ballistics testing, things like that? How does that all look?
Go ahead, Brian.
Cow bones and what is it? OSB, layered OSB. Shooting at close range distance in the field also. You know, our products are sent out to testers to see how they react on real animals. You know, gelatin's great. It kind of gives you an idea of how something's going to react, but there's nothing like bone, tissue, organs, fur from different animals to provide feedback. That's the big one.
An OSB is as scientific as one could get.
It's a pretty hard, you know, that stuff's pretty hard, you know, with the glue they put in there. And so we'll shoot it at angles and we'll shoot it through and through and check it after penetration, see what the edge looks like. And, you know, our S7 stuff, Rockwell's at 56, 58, which is a pretty hard head. And so it holds up really well, the edge retention, not just in testing through cow bones, OSB, et cetera, but I got pictures and I showed them at our trade show season here to people. And I said, this is the Omega after I blew through my buck. Scroll over. This is the 3-blade after my son blew through his. And we had a really good season this year. This is my son-in-law bevel after he blew through his. And I'm blowing these pictures up and they're just mind blown at the edge that's still there. I would still hunt with every single one of them that we shot deer with this year. I would put it back in the quiver and hunt with it and not have a guilty conscience for it. We don't. We do touch them up before we put them back in the quiver, but yeah, they're just solid heads, and the edge retention is just second to none as far as, you know, what I've seen over the years.
And then how does that honing look with that hardness?
It's, you know, I always say that sharpening is, some people have the patience for it. Some people have a little, you know, skill to it, a feel. Other people hate it with a passion. I end up sharpening all of our heads, my son-in-law and my 3 sons before season. They don't like it. I enjoy it. Turn on the music and just sharpen. Some can be a little tougher than others, but what I do is I put it aside. I'll go to the next one. So you're not trying to overwork it and get frustrated, set it aside, work on another one and then go back to it. What I found last year, interestingly enough, and I was talking about this to one of our owners recently, I found that before this last season, our 3-blade heads, I worked those right down to a strop and got those hair popping sharp. A couple of the single bevels, if I stropped it, it felt like I lost that razor edge. So I went back to the 2000 grit and 1000 grit sandpaper and left them. And they were just hair popping, shaving the paper. So I think some people get too caught up in a process and you've got to think your way through stuff sometimes and go, okay, this one worked like this. Don't say this one has to. It's different.
Right.
You know, in Rockwell, a 56 to 58, maybe one's 56, one's 58. And if there's any tolerance in there, you know, you deal with that also. But as far as getting an edge on them, it's not an issue, especially with the Omega, the lay flat technology, no jig needed. You just lay that thing on the stone and go to work with it. And that thing was fun to sharpen this year. I enjoyed that.
So I'm going to just pull that up, right? So if anyone is listening that or watching, you can see on the ferrule, that is on the same, call it plane, as the bevel. So instead of having to hold that on edge to get that, you run that flat, and then that's going to help you align that bevel as you run it up on that stone.
Yeah.
There. So
when you turn that to the backside, then there's a little micro bevel in the backside that also matches the ferrule. So when you get that edge where you have a nice little burr and you turn that over and you drag it maybe on sandpaper or strop, whatever you're doing to finish it, that thing just, it's unbelievable how sharp it gets.
If I can you
yeah.
see? Yeah, you can see it there. There it is.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things when Alex handed me the pack and, you know, we started talking about that at Expo there. I was like, oh, wow, somebody actually thought beyond the bevel in terms of getting that honed and sharpened. And that was immediately a standout for me, right? It was like that level of thought process went into the end user. I got to look at this product in a brighter light. It just, yeah. And it's a great looking head. I weighed everything. Everything was right in that 0.01 grains. So everything, and then width-wise, money, lengthwise, money, ferrule, money. So consistency, and that's one of the things that drives my purchase, especially when it comes to broadheads, you know, arrow components, is consistency across the build. I'm anal. When I build an arrow, I'm meticulous about how much glue I'm using, where everything is going. If I'm building a 535 grain arrow, that's what this one is here. I want another 11 coming out at 535 grain. And the last dozen I built, I screwed up too. One of them, and I can't, the one I was trying to figure it out yesterday, and it's 547. For the life of me, I cannot figure out why it's 547 grain. And the only thing that I could think of is I think that I inadvertently put two inserts in there.
Hit inserts?
Yeah. And I think that's what accounted for, because it's almost 10 grains exactly, right? My glue, I mean, I'm so meticulous on my glue. So it's the only thing I could think of. So I'm going to deconstruct it the best I can, and I'm going to figure it out, because it came out, I mean, it was 547, and I was just like, this makes zero sense. I pulled components off, weighed the components, everything is jiving, and I do a full spreadsheet. Like, I'll go through sometimes I'm embarrassed telling I'll go through and I weigh each vein, I weigh each individual vein, and I'll create a pile, right? If we're, you know, call it 5 grains, 6 grains, 7.2, 8, whatever it is, right? And I'll match those through there. Depending on how those land, 10% here, 40% here, 40% here, 10% there, then my 10%ers going to be my cock veins, right? And then the other, that's going to be, you know, and then I try to build a consistent arrow across the board. If I'm pulling out the 5, if I'm pulling out the 7, I'm pulling out the 8, they're going to go on every single arrow the same, the best I can, to have the same build plus or minus a couple grain on each single arrow. So I have no idea, outside of putting another insert in that SOB, that I gained 10 grains on that one. It was pretty interesting.
Well, that's going to drive you nuts. So you might as well just go.
The deconstruction
and work on that tonight, right?
Yeah, the deconstruction has started. Some of the glue, I should have hot melted them in there. I haven't had a ton of luck with some of the hot melt in the arrow. For some reason, it seems like I always snap loose. So I tried a lighter epoxy. So I have it soaking so I can see if I can't get the hits out of there and see if that's what screwed me up. But I think it is. Okay. So we were talking about R&D. So what's your, yes, we're building it, no, we're building it factors when it comes to the heads, right? Say we're testing out a single bevel. How many, you know, iterations did you guys run through with that single bevel? Was that, you know, due to the point? Was that due to the edges? How does that look before you say, okay, it's going to market or we're scrapping this idea?
There's never a set of like integrations we go through, you know. I know with the Omegas, we actually worked with Daryl Barnett to design the Omega. Like you guys were talking about, you know, the feedback was sharpening. Some people just hate it or don't like the time it takes. So that was the driving factor to design the Omega, which we launched in July, I believe, and it's been our number one seller since then. So huge success with the broadhead, and for obvious reasons, just super easy to sharpen, but still getting those characteristics of a single bevel that everybody loves. But that broadhead went through several iterations to figure out kind of what we wanted from it to get the sharpening perfect, to be as easy as possible, because there were different things we could do, you know, but it's a patent pending head too. So a lot of the features on there were very meticulously chosen. It's got the tanto tip there, the bevel angles, and kind of all that good stuff. So Brian, you can probably talk more about the testing of it at least.
Yeah. And then also the wedge on the opposite side. So I'm not sure. Can you catch that? Basically anything that gets in the Omega's way, you know, it's going to have to get out of the way. So I think some of that also can be attributed to, I think if you have really smart people who understand geometry, who have hunted and killed a lot of stuff, and then you add somebody like Daryl Barnett, kind of known as Rocket Man is what people have called him on the internet, but super smart guy with flight characteristics and aerodynamics. And when you put him to it along with our people, you apply that science to a lot of experience. And not that you don't test things. Obviously we do. We test it. But that kind of cuts out, I think, a lot of trial and error. I know there were different iterations with our heads, but if it's something that's it's real science and it makes sense and it actually has functioned in the past or something similar, maybe you're just kind of tweaking a design along the way, you know, I think it just makes sense. It's an easy go then.
Heck yeah. Bear with me here. I'm scrolling too. So one of the things that I noticed was this custom test pack, right? So if you're a tinkerer or somebody that wants to see, you know, what your preference is, you guys have a custom test, I think is a three pack. Yeah. Three pack of broadhead. So you can go from a solid to a vented to a single bev and then mix and match your weights there. That's actually, again, for an end user, like, why wouldn't I go down that path to understand what my bow likes to shoot at the front of whatever arrow it is that I'm building at the time? And it runs through the entire product line. So you get to select three heads of your choice, be it the single bevel two blades, the lefts, the rights, three blade vented, three blade solid. I have my opinion of vented. I'll shoot a turkey with them. But I thought that was pretty cool. When it's someone like me that wants to see, right? I mean, it's an expensive endeavor. I don't know why that was a tongue twister, but it's an expensive endeavor, right? So you spend all this time, like I said, I'm anal about my builds. So I fashion all this out on paper, I put it together, I get a broadhead, and now I've spent $100, you know, on a three pack or whatever it is, and I don't like the way they fly on the front of it. I could test this out early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great flipping idea, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do that for a while, and just, you know, it's just something we got around to more recently, putting it on the site, but it has been popular, especially for a lot of those people coming from maybe a mechanical who have absolutely no idea if they want to shoot a three blade or they want to try and just jump, you know, head first into the whole single bevel game. So I think it's a great resource. And then we also offer the field point test kits too, for people who like to tinker around with maybe different weights. So it's just a pack of field points that has one of each from 100 grain all the way up to 300 grains. So you get a 100, 125, and so on. So you can kind of play around with different field point, you know, grain weights and figure out what grain weight you want to shoot before the season starts and before you buy your broadheads.
Heck yeah. And then you guys have that crazy looking, I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over because I'm on the website right now. So you got to walk me through the three blade 125 turkey spur. So that is, that's an interesting looking setup there in terms of a broadhead. So I'm curious now that I've seen it.
Yeah, so that's designed just to create drag and, you know, stick in the turkey versus a full pass through. I think we've actually got some exciting things we're working on this year with that, just based on feedback and different things we've wanted to do over the years, because that has been around for several years now, and that's been a popular one too. We offer it in 125 and 150 grain. I haven't got to shoot that one yet, but I don't, Brian, you're not a big turkey hunter, so you haven't got to shoot that one.
I'm not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So the rear, what is it? Okay. It's the
super,
rear
super cool videos with that of customers shooting it. And
So the rear blade is only edged on, call it the top of the blade, in line with the main blade, correct? And the other is flat face, and that's what
yes.
creates the yep. drag through there. That is yep. fucking interesting. Yep. I mean, it makes sense.
Yep. That's what I mentioned, like with the really smart people that we have that design these things. It's just, you know, you apply science and some common sense and experience, and you get good stuff.
And that's a hard one. I mean, you know, unless you are lopping off heads at the neck, you know, you're really looking for a bird on the run, especially when you get out of distance with some of those bigger boys. And well, I won't say what my favorite shot with a single bevel on a turkey is to get them to drop at 8 yards consistently. But that is a really good idea. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of mechanicals much anymore. I used to love them. I had a couple of bad instances, and I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I grew up shooting fixed. There was no such thing as mechanicals when I started. I mean, to back up completely, we shot bows with 50-pound, 55-pound draw weight and 50% let off. People would die if they tried that now. They're used to the 90% stuff. You're holding 25, 27 pounds. And didn't know any better.
Yep.
And, you know, we shot the XX75s. We shot the Bear Razor heads and Zwicky heads, 150, 160 grain. Our arrow weights were 500 grains back then, even on pretty short draw lengths. And we're pulling this, holding stupid weight. And you know what I never heard was, did you get a pass through? Never.
Never.
It was just a given. We never worried about penetration because science is real. And that's a whole separate rabbit hole, but the point is fixed heads just work, and they worked for years for me. But I jumped on a mechanical thing for a few years, had two bad situations, and said I'm done. And then that's when I got hooked up with VPA and started shooting those, and I'm done with mechanics forever.
Yeah And like I said I've been a single bevel guy for a while now, and I mean, just the wound channel that it creates, and then in my opinion of it, right? Even if I don't get the full pass through and that arrow's sticking out, the devastation it's going to cause as it's twisting, it has to twist back out or pull across flesh that's not cut. It's just damage in, damage out either way. Yeah, I love them. And then you guys got these crates. That's what's interesting is, like, you look at the turkey head and then these small game thumpers, and it's just like, well, that just makes sense too. Looking at the 175. Oh, that's a glue on. I was going to say, why does that look like that? But that 175 with that kind of concave tip on that thing. I mean, that's taking energy and literally driving that energy in and through versus having something with a rounded, broader tip that dispersed that energy. And tell me if I'm wrong in that design, just looking at it, that's what I see when we talk about on impact stuff there.
Yep.
Man, that's going to be in my quiver for my grouse for September.
Yeah.
I always got to have one for the grouse. Although Brian wouldn't know about that because he doesn't want to come hunt out west with us.
Oh, yes, he does. He does.
Yeah, I do. I will.
If you want your life ruined forever, come out in September. And get into some bulls. You won't have to kill a thing. All you need to do is hear a couple of bugles, a couple hundred yards off.
Yeah, the job that I'd left here in October, some guys there, elk hunt, caribou regularly. They go out west in Alaska and Canada. And they said the first time, one guy told me, the first time he ever went, he didn't get a shot. And sometimes he forgot he was even there to get a shot. He was just watching the action, listening to the bugles, listening to the calls, and you kind of get lost in it. You get snap out of it and go, I'm here to hunt, you know, and get back in your focus again. And yeah, he said, once you do that, you'll never look at it the same.
And you can never avoid it. Like, it has to be an every year thing. I mean, it just, it is heaven in a bottle every September. Yeah. So yeah, outside of the, outside of the broadheads, you guys do components or anything else, you know, like that, sleeves or.
Yep. Collars.
Yep, we have the footers that we machine. Yep. And then the small game heads we do for all grain weights. We do still, like you mentioned, offer some glulon options. We also do have some glulon options blades too for some of the tread that will have lands on the market. We are working to expand and actually offer like a 15 and 17 inch, hopefully this year, in the riser too, to kind of expand that product offering. But yeah, a few other exciting things we're working on this year. Hopefully we can, you know, say more about it here in the next couple of months as we get closer to season, but it should be a great year.
So what size arrows are you guys covering in the footers?
It's in the 205 range. It's in that neighborhood. I've used them on Rip TKOs. I think, aren't they technically though, Alex, they're for the FMJs, different size FMJs, but yet if you just match up the ID with the OD of the arrow you want, I've done that and they work. They work great. Good. Yep.
And you guys are machining all that too, huh?
Yep.
I'll pull those up real quick. So size. So, okay. So yeah, size for that, also compatible with the OD of 0.263. Dangerous game. Heck yeah, I'll have to look at that. And then any inserts or hit inserts, things like that coming in the future?
Yeah, we're working on a few things. So we're hoping if we can crank through our list of everything we want to get done this year, it should be on the lookout for that. So yeah, we're excited. Looking forward to it. We're always working on something.
I tried to sucker you into saying yes. Cause you said that before. So give us a little bit of a look of
eventually.
What can you let out of the bag that you're working on?
We publicly announced we're working with Valkyrie a few months ago. So we've always made Valkyrie Archery, if you're familiar, he's based out west, but always made Brent's Broadhead and things like that. So we are working with them on a couple new products for the coming year. But yeah.
And
super excited about that partnership. So I know a lot of people have been asking questions. So
yeah, they hit the market strong. Hopefully it seems like
we'll have answers for everybody soon.
Yeah. Alex, you're on a bad, bad delay. Sorry.
She's breaking up.
Yeah, she's on a huge delay there.
Yeah, I know that also while we're catching up there with her, you know, one part of the market that is, and I know listeners are going to, maybe some will hate me, I don't know, but I'm not a crossbow guy, but it's a no-brainer that market is huge.
Oh, absolutely.
In every state where it's legal, there are more crossbow hunters than there are vertical bow hunters. Every state. So it only makes sense to jump into that also. So I'll just leave it at that. Right, Alex?
Yep.
I like how tight-lipped Alex is. If you need a secret cup, she's your girl.
No secrets. So it's just a matter of having million things going on and wanting to, you know, not overpromise for the coming season.
Yeah.
Understood. So give me top two heads, right? If you guys are talking to a Western hunter, what are the top two heads in the arsenal at VP Archery?
I mean, I would say if you're looking at light and fast, you can't go wrong with 125 grain three blade to me. You know, you do get the extra, that third blade, you know, cutting surface there. And then I would never shy away from a single bevel or Omega for anything. Our regular single bevel, the penetration that we saw with that head before we switched over to the Omega, actually a couple of my boys are still using the single bevel. I think we had one deer that went over 70 yards with our single bevel or Omega. And that was on a poor hit. It was back a little far. But I will say that I believe that if it hadn't achieved the penetration it did, I think that the deer would have been wounded. We never would have recovered it. Instead, he went to his first bed. Unfortunately, we had to wait till the next morning to recover him, but he was there. And I know for a fact, just from experience, that if we hadn't gotten a penetration out of that, that deer would have been lost. And that's sickening. Anyone who has ever done it, it's just not a good feeling.
The worst.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at, and I generally shoot 125 grain, right? And I was looking at some of the three blade options, and I'm going to have to up my grain weight to move into that longer three blade. I don't know if it's an aesthetic thing or if it's my mind telling me that longer blade and design with the, you know, call it the 200s, the 250s up to that 300 is a better head than just a 125 three blade.
With the 3-to-1 blade ratio, you know, the length to the diameter kind of goes along with the ASME foundations findings in their tests, and it's great for penetration. But when you combine, you know, carbon or tool steel like ours, whichever you're using, in fact, the carbon, the three blade 100 grain, one of our customers is a high volume shop in the area, and one of their bow technicians this year tried our 100 grain three blade for the first time. He sends me a picture, and he's in a saddle and he's looking straight down, and there's a buck laying at the base of his tree. And I said, "Did you shoot it?" And he died under you. And he said, "No, I shot him straight down through the spine. The arrow came out and was touching the ground, and he obviously just dropped. So blew completely through the spine, went through the heart, and the buck dropped in his tracks." That was with a three grain or the three blade 100 grain, which it's a small head, but if you look at it too and you hold it, it almost to me just looks like a little powerhouse. It's the first VPA head I ever shot, and it flew like a dart, and it does some good work.
Yeah, the DRT is definitely the way to be. I shot an Axis last year, and that was my shortest track ever. And the blood trail was 11 inches long. I mean, you want to talk about stoked? There ain't nothing like it. So I can't even imagine up in the tree, the angle to come straight down on the spine like that. Woof.
Yeah. And he was shooting a hinge.
That's a stud right there.
Shooting a hinge release.
Yeah.
That's difficult. He's a good shooter. He saw a shot competition. So he knows what he's doing, obviously, but that is a really tough shot at 10, not to mention at a zero. Yeah. That's a tough shot.
Nuts. So So you talked about the regular or premium single bevel. So the difference in that from the Omega is really the sharpening, maybe a little bit in terms of the shape and width of the blade.
Alex?
Yep. The sharpening is the biggest thing. So you have to have a jig to sharpen the single bevel, the traditional single bevel, I guess the ones you're looking at there on the screen. We do offer the ones also in the carbon tool steel versus the S7. So just different price points too, depending on if customers are looking for a single bevel that's a little more affordable, they can go with the carbon tool steel option. If they want to upgrade to that S7 steel, which is just a more premium, it's going to hold that edge a lot better, they can get the S7 version. So that's those guys. And then from there, we kind of applied those same design characteristics a little bit when designing the Omega, just that easy lay flat sharpening technology there. And then the Omega does have a tanto tip versus the chisel tip with the single bevel. So we do get feedback from customers that like each. We found them both to be successful with our testing. So we do offer both, but everything kind of comes down to personal preference. It seems like even though there's a lot of testing behind different heads, people are always going to have their opinions on, you know, what style they want and different things like that.
So I want you to expand a little bit between the tool steel versus the S7, but to comment on what you said, we all have our personal preferences. And I think the weight of that personal preference is derived 60 to 70% solely based on aesthetics and not actual use or benefit of design. I swear to goodness, I don't know why I say 60 to 70%, but I watch people buy bows. I watch people buy broadheads. I watch people buy arrows and fletching, and almost everything is aesthetically based. As much as we say, well, I like it's just dead in my hand, but you stared at the color for 45 minutes and finally selected that one. So that's my comment there. But if you can, for the folks that are listening, talk a little bit about the differences in the tool steel versus the S7 so they understand that monetary difference in the value there.
Well, obviously the Rockwell, the overall hardness is going to be different. when you look at the application of S7 tool steel, I mean, they make fixtures and dies out of that stuff. So it's designed to be more durable. With that, obviously, does, you know, come a cost. But we've also done some testing. I also shot the S7 with a single bevel, but I did testing with the regular carbon. As far as edge retention and all the testing I did, which would be bones at home, even when I shot through cow and deer scapula, as well as OSB, I was really impressed with the carbon steel. I mean, it's a great material. It's not like it's bad. It's just S7 is just that extra step up there. So, you know, the preferencing, like you'd mentioned, it is funny. I think what kind of intrigues people about a single bevel, or especially the Omega, is the visual part. It's like, what is this thing about? Or, oh man, that's interesting. Even a single bevel, they go, why is it only sharpened on one side? Some people don't understand what that does and what, you know, the science behind it. So you get to explain it. And then when you really think about it, after what you see it does to an animal, you know, and the amount of penetration you get and the damage in the wound channel, it just makes a whole lot of sense. But I would say the difference between the two, like Alex said, there's some preference for sure. I mean, a harder material is a harder material. It's still okay to sharpen. But, you know, if you think about too, the stuff that we hunted back in the day, like I said, they weren't anything like what we're making now. And they held up pretty well also. I think personally, the bottom line is, if you think about, if your bow isn't tuned, your arrow is coming out of your bow crooked, oscillating, it's not doing what it's supposed to do, it's not impacting your target, perpendicular, straight, whatever that looks like based on the animal, you're not only going to lose a lot of energy, but you're also putting undue stress on the head itself. Instead of a nice, perfectly straight, you know, cut through the fur and the bone and the tissue, you know, you go at an angle and you're just not, you're not making the best use of that edge, I guess is what I would say. It's only going to get more dull as it goes through the animal. It can't get sharper. Right. It can't. It's impossible.
And then the chisel versus the tensile tip. I mean, that's, oof, if you, I mean, that's almost as long a conversation as single bevel versus double bevel.
Yeah, I would say, out of the tonneau tip, obviously, is a proven penetrator. Thing's been around for a long time. What I liked out of the tip on the single bevel is it seemed to just displace bone really well. When it threw shoulder blade, it just literally splits it, opens that up, like twists it, like it's not even there. Obviously, both work. My Omega worked really well this last year as well. But again, there's some preference in it. Both are going to kill. Both are going to kill effectively. I just think that our heads, I call them boringly reliable. There's nothing to open. There's nothing really fancy to look at. It's just a nice, sharp, quality piece of steel you put on the end of your arrow, and it does great work.
And that's
kind of boring.
That boring is good though, right? I mean,
yes.
Ultimately, right, everything that we've talked about and you know, it all comes down to shot placement and time behind the string. So boring isn't a bad thing.
Right.
If you're putting it in the right spot, man, and build, you know, for me, I love building arrows, right? I try to build a as good as an arrow as I could build, and then being able to put something that's, lack of a better word, fun, you know, and a little bit boring on the tip, and just go and have that consistency time and time again. And that's one of the things that I said, you know, early on, is when I pull them out of the pack and I throw them on the scale, they're right there. Measure width, I mean, and it's funny because you'll get, you know, you'll get from tip to, call it, you know, back of broadhead, right at, you know, where the ferrule is just full ferrule. And that's where I've seen more variance than not from company to company to company to company. And okay, I only have a 3-pack, but to see how tight that tolerance was on the Omegas, I was pretty impressed. And then that grain weight falls in line. The accuracy from head to head in that grain weight falls in line with where I want to be on my arrow builds. Now, when you guys go through that, is your QA process before packaging, are you looking at grain weight consistency per pack, or how does that look?
Did we lose Alex?
I think we did.
I think we did. Yeah. Our manufacturing process is kept pretty tight-lipped. I know they used to give tours through the shop and stopped doing that for different reasons, including, you know, RIP, it's important to maintain that. But yeah, the quality that's maintained with blade thickness, with weight is all, it's all pretty meticulous. It's all very, very meticulous to make sure that nothing, you know, we don't want to sell a premium product that we call high quality and American made product and have an end user complain and say, hey, this isn't what you sold me. That's just not good for business. It's not good for your name. We have more integrity than that, you know, as a company. And you know, when I mentioned boringly reliable earlier too, that's what you said was perfect. If you don't have to worry about the weight, the dimensions, the blade thickness, the sharpness, as long as you do your due diligence, you put on the front of an arrow out of a tuned bow, it is boring because you don't have to worry about it.
That's right.
You tune your bow at the beginning is the hard part. Get that done and get these things flying right. But I'll tell you this much, because of the tolerance of these also, light issues you just don't have. Now, is that to say you may not get some outlier maybe down the road, but I personally haven't found any that wouldn't fly. What I have found is if you insert tune them, you're going to get more variation out of an insert, whether it's brass, aluminum, titanium, steel. You know, if you think about the diameter of an insert and your threads are off just a little bit, just a little bit angle, you're going to get run out in the head. Doesn't mean your head's bad. You have tolerance in the head, tolerance in the insert, tolerance in the arrow. So insert tuning is important also. If you get that thing to spin straight, mark it, and then glue it in there, you have a lot better success as well.
That's I'm glad you brought that up, right? Because that's a very, very overlooked point of an arrow build. And more times than not, the broadhead is blamed. And it's the craziest thing. It's like you have an entire process there that there should be checks and balances on. So I'm glad you brought that up. And that is part of my anal process.
You know, it's amazing. We've talked about it as a team and that, you know, we spend $1,400 on a bow and we put high-end rest on and we put high-end sights and we buy $300 releases. And I mean, we've got $2,500 in these packages. And then we go to Walmart and we buy a 3-pack of broadheads for $30. And to me, it's mind-blowing. I don't understand when that is the part of the arrow.
Yes, sir.
The most important.
It's leading the way.
The cutting edge. That's the part that's going to make contact first, and it's going to help pull that thing through the animal. And it's just mind-blowing to me that people take shortcuts on what I think is the most important part of the build. Mm-hmm.
No, I would 110% agree with that. I have a buddy that shoots, that his bow has to be a dozen plus years old, but he's smart enough to know that I'm going to go buy the best broadhead for my money that I can buy. And every year he'll re-up six of them. He's like, look, I don't spend money on anything else. I'm buying a new six of these, whatever they cost, every single year. And for as much guff as that guy gets about that bow, but you watch him shoot it and he's lights freaking out, man.
Yeah.
And he knows.
Well, that's funny. You know. Yeah. Hey, I've got a Bowtech. I bought my first Bowtech back. It was a brand new. I bought it in 2003. I hunted with that for 16 years. I just retired that in 2019.
Heck yeah.
I got a lot of deer with it. And actually, funny thing is, my wife was the one going, what are you doing? Buy a new bow. Everybody else has one. I said, why?
Right.
It works. And then I went and shot some and I went, okay, there is a difference in a 2003 model and modern bows.
Yeah.
Massive difference in efficiency and features and tunability. It's not even close. So since then, I probably have bought 15 or 16. So.
Look, I just got this thing here.
Is that a lift?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal. And yeah. Guess why I settled on it? I love the way it shoots, but it has the mossy oak land. The color got me.
Yeah, the color. Alex knows.
45 minutes, yeah.
There it is right there.
He stared at it and said, I love the color.
Oh, my good. I mean, it's so freaking cool, too. And it's that old school bottom land. Oh, man.
Hey, those bows shoot really nice. My youngest son has one on order. He ordered it in late December. It'll be here in mid-May. So I can't shoot those. The Matthews, I've got a... From sports, I've got a kind of a messed up left thumb, and the way that riser is shaped, I cannot get my thumb out of the way, and it just wears a hole in it. It's like, it's debilitating, and it's too bad because I just shot one of those again today. They're a really nice shooting bow. Super nice.
I haven't shot a Matthews in 5 or 6 years. I mean, shot them, but you know, haven't owned one or purchased one. And I shot this bow at Expo, and I tried to buy it from Matthews right there. I was like, okay, where do I sign in at? And luckily, you know, not local to me. They're a few hours away, but No Limits took care of me and said, hey, we got a bottom land in. And I ran the 2.5-3 hours over the hill to go pick it up Saturday. I mean, just a wonderful shooting bow. And the
nice.
The meticulous efforts that they put into their R&D to really get everything dialed in from the limbs to the string and really said, hey, we got to look at this entire package and not just a new riser or a new cam. So it's really, really, really a well balanced, great shooting machine.
Right. Yeah, it'll look nice with the Omegas flying out of that thing.
Well, we'll see this week. Actually, can't shoot that one yet because I don't have my sight on it, but we'll get a sight. I'm waiting on that sight to come in. I'm hoping. All I need is about 4 or 5 hours at the range before Texas, and I'm good. So we'll see what happens. But the Omegas, they got spun on some arrows last night, and I was hoping to shoot them today, but we'll get out tomorrow and send some downrange. And typically that hunt, we're shooting sub 65-ish. There's a couple stands where the pigs will come down the roads and they'll offer you a little bit of a further shot. I think the last pig I took out of there, I think was like 62 yards from a stand. So we'll get to have some fun, but you definitely got to have the night at locks in that scrub country down there. So I'm looking forward to it. So before we wrap, let's tell folks, you know, where they can get a hold of you guys, what the website is, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Alex, you go ahead. Did we lose her again?
I think she's just here for the giggles at this point.
All right. I'll get it started. And if she gets her connection back, vparchery.com.
I'm here. You guys are the ones who are lost.
Alex, are you sure? All right.
I'm good.
There she is.
Again. Go ahead. Tell us where they can find us.
You can find us at vparchery.com. Just Google VPA Vantage Point Archery. We're on all the social media platforms, so give us a follow there. Yeah, really anywhere you can find us, and we'll post about new products and different deals we have going on and different things like that. So be sure to reach out with any question.
And then the YouTube is the same, VPA Archery?
Yep. Okay. Yep.
And any last words? Give the folks the elevator pitch on why they should open that website right now and get some VP archery points screwed onto those arrows this season.
You want to go first, Alex?
Sure, if I don't get kicked off here. Yep. Precision machined, American made, so solid one-piece construction, no metal injection molding, no welding together, so super, super durable. Lifetime warranty. So say you had pass through, hit a pile of rocks, you can't sharpen it out, send it back to us. We'll send you a replacement head.
Yep.
Hot.
So there's that. There's the business aspect. I would just say, looking at it from my perspective, kind of fortunate with long arms, and I'm pretty tall. So I have a long draw, like 31.5 inches, generate a lot of energy. So I could probably shoot a lot of different heads, but I would also say that because of the energy that is generated out of my draw length, the fact that we pass through, we're sticking in the ground afterward, and the edge retention is still there, I think speaks volumes. And I would also say, if you are a shorter draw person, don't shy away from fixed blades. That is more important, in my opinion. You don't want to give away energy. Giving away energy to open a mechanical is just... it just doesn't make any sense. I can't imagine a NASCAR driver saying, hey, we can top out at 700 horsepower for race A, but let's go to 650 instead. It just doesn't make any sense. So maximize your potential and do that with a fixed blade head, especially if you have a shorter draw length or your downline draw weight a little bit.
Heck yeah. Well, I appreciate the time greatly. I look forward to sending these downrange this week and sending you guys some pictures, hopefully of a couple more axes and some piggies down there in Texas. Everybody, if you're listening, go check them out at Vantage Point Archery. Give them a follow on Instagram and go sub over at YouTube.
Thanks, Guy. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Guy.